Hi. Are you a muskie fisherman that wants custom muskie baits, but doesn't want to crawl through the cesspool that is Facebook, where people sell their used lawn furniture, post boomer memes, and make comments like this?
Yard sale starts at 5 a.m. sharp. No early birds.
I'm sorry, but I don't believe that counts as a first muskie.
too expensive. Hey, by the way, love your channel.
Hey girl, LOL. I know we haven't talked since high school, but do you want to try to help me sell some yoga pants?
I'm going to leave a nasty comment on every post because I just got done with third shift at the sucking factory.
Hi, this is Mark Kuckelberg. I invented Facebook to give a platform for crazy people all across this great planet of ours.
If this sounds like a great place to buy from, have fun. But we got some custom stuff at the Muskie Shop that'll knock your off. All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird, how does she hang?
Oh, looking like a I'm not sure what it's looking like, Steve, but looking good.
Grade A dangler there, boys. Anyway.
Oh, another beautiful day in the Northwoods here.
Oh, a blustery what?
No, in upper 70s. I mean, it's just perfect.
Perfect. I know it was a rough start there on season opener. Sort of the weather got a little kooky there on you guys, but
the muskie opener was last week, but it was actually a lot of people did a lot better than I thought because we had, I think it was only like a high of, I don't know if it hit mid 50s on Saturday or Sunday maybe.
Right.
It was pretty cool and kind of dreary, but you know, I heard some people that had five fish weekends. You know, nothing big, but good. Pretty good action.
Can't go wrong there. So, anyway, folks, believe it or not, we are, what, 4.5, 5 weeks out from the Muskie Shop Bash. So,
I know. It's closing in quickly.
It's crazy. We're going to have to figure out what to do here. Can't say it. We can't come out and just say it, who it will be. But I think we've got two more super amazing speakers coming out.
Yeah, it's looking good.
Probably, hands down, if we nail this and all the favors come in and we get everything lined up here, probably be a better lineup than just about any muskie show in modern history, to be honest with you.
Well, think about it. I mean, you got Smitty.
Uh-huh.
You got Booker.
Uh-huh.
You got Steve Paul.
Boo!
You got the most successful tournament fisherman I know, Matt Raley.
Uh-huh.
And then you line up two of the most famous muskie fishermen in the history of muskie fishing.
On
all
top
in the
of
same
it.
Afternoon in the same spot.
Legends. We probably
hello.
Hello. It'll be epic. So if you can make it, July 17th, Minocqua, Wisconsin, we are still doing the fishing outing the next day, folks. So some of you have messaged if you want to show up and you want to fish with me or Jay. I think maybe Jim, the owner of the Muskie Shop, might be dragging around in there. If you want to fish with us that next day, if you're at the bash, let us know and we will sort of line something up. It'll be fun. We'll get out and do some stuff and fool around. And guess what we'll be filming for, Jay? Muskie Friggin' Shop TV, boys.
Just came out yesterday. Last night.
If you haven't seen it, get on the YouTubes. You can go to www.tube.gov. It's on the WWs.
Muskie Shop YouTube. Anybody listening, I mean, it's on the app, too.
It's on the app. I don't understand how the internet really works anyway. So
you look at that awesome green thumbnail and it says Monster. What does it say? Hellhound Monster Muskie. That's what it's called.
It says Little Mr. Monsty.
One click and you are live.
One click.
It's Stephen Paul.
It's just groaning. What's so funny is, A, I hate being in a video, right? Never wanted to do this. It's sort of fun. It sort of sucks. B, that there are literally dudes on the internet whose so small, they have to discuss whether a small young girl actually caught a fish. I find it to be hilarious. They got to discuss it and go, I don't know if that counts as a catch. So if you're into that, that's boring. If you don't like seeing people getting the rod handed to them, A, never become a musky guy because that's how it works. B, there's going to be more of it. I think next week you guys will get to see an elderly man take the rod and you can argue the finer points on whether he caught that fish or not. But I'm going to just throw this out here because I get to vent on here. Like the one dude that said that's not very pepsicated or you'd have to be pepsicated. Dude, it's my job. That's what you do. That's what guides do. If your guide throws and you have to pay hard-earned U.S. dollars to watch your guide catch fish and net your guide's fish, which I see other people doing in videos, which is stupid as all get out. If you're paying good money to go out and net someone else's fish, that means you're a grade A ding dong. Anyway, so I'm going to explain that. I'm on my soapbox here. Deal with it for a second. The way that works, because some people are asking, why did you hand the rod to that girl? I've gotten a couple emails about it. Hey, how's that work? Here's the deal. As a professional muskie guide, I'm out there doing different things. If you noticed in that video, the nice young couple in that had never been muskie fishing. They are throwing spinning rods with spinner baits on them because we're at stage one of muskie fishing. What I do is I will cast, say, like a hellhound or baits that take a little bit of finesse that you can't learn how to use in the first 30 minutes and do something a little bit different. If I hook a fish, I hand the rod because there's some people go, how can you hand the rod? After you've caught a few, I don't even know why I want to say the number. After you caught a bunch of these things, you're not really losing any sleep over handing it over to somebody else to reel in. That's just the game.
Well, I think a good guide is, number one, going to pretty much try to bend over backwards for the clients to get them fish.
Well,
can.
I love it because it brings up the subject of handing the rod or not. I've had this debate with a couple of my buddies in Wisconsin. I in some places they don't because there's high enough population density that you can just go point over there and throw a spinnerbait. I like to sort of reinforce, hey, this is what's going on, and we can get the job done. You know what I'm saying? It sort of helps overcome angler deficiencies if they're a newer angler or something like that. But I love the debate of like the guys that'll go like, I went on Lake St. Clair and caught a 50-incher, right? What my favorite thing to ask when that comes up, like, yeah, I got a 50. Go, were you trolling? Was the dude driving the boat? I don't see the difference. That's why I hand the rod, because I go, man, whether I've got it in a rod holder and I'm dragging the baits around or I'm casting it, the dude driving the boat is catching the fish when you're trolling.
Well, I think you did a good job. I'm just going to say I think you did a great job because I don't know too many people that would hook into a 53-inch muskie and then say, here.
I don't care. That's the funny. Wait till next week when you get to see a 52-inch muskie. It's 1 inch shorter, and I do the same thing.
Boom!
Oh, there's probably about 4 of them this season. I'm not soapboxing. I'm just explaining for guys that are listening. They're like, "How do you hand the rod?" At a certain point, that's why I love doing the podcast. You get to the point where it's more enjoyment to watch somebody else reel the thing in, or fight a fish, or catch a fish than catching a fish is. I don't fish by myself hardly anymore because of that, because I catch it and I go, I've caught a fish. To me, it's more about having somebody on the boat that's excited. I get excited from watching other people's excitement. So if you're watching the series and you see me handing the rod off, that's because I ask clients at the beginning of the trip. And this is for any aspiring guides, it's the best thing you can ever do. And like I talked to Cody Dalton, help him with stuff, all this stuff. We talk about stuff like this all the time, and we're talking guide talk here. But it boils down to this. It's one of those things where if you get on my boat, I'll ask you the first thing I do. Do you want me to cast? Do you want to just throw? And they'll go, well, you can cast. And say, if I hook a fish, I'm not here to fish for myself. If I hook into a fish, I want you to take the rod because I'm going to be an extra set of hands for you. And that's how I handle that. So if you're ever wondering, I'm going to get off that topic. I just thought it was funny. I'm not butthurt about it. I could really care less what those Dingledorfs think. I just wanted to clarify for my client's sake because she was super excited and had only been out there for about 15 minutes. So
yeah, I know. It's so cool.
You know, it is what it is. other than that, that's the rod handing thing. The other thing I wanted to bring about the show that I think is so funny. No one, like, we've got a bunch of messages about stuff. People ask about rods and reels, right? What's this? Yeah. What's that? What's this? Which is cool. And then somebody pointed out my wristband. I've brought up the wristband before. It's from Fish and Jerk Baits. Okay. Yeah. I'm not trying to look like cool. One person said, what's up with the Metallica wristband? That's because if you cast every day, all day, a reel's going to bother your wrist. Other than that, no one, not one person pointed out my mismatched shoes. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, literally, if anything, you're going to notice, the dude's wearing one pink shoe and one blue shoe, but you're looking at the wristband. I thought it was funny. I do that. I'm just talking because it's awkward for people to watch a video with me in it, so that's why I'm doing this. I'm just sort of venting. If you're wondering what's up with the shoes and you notice, I do that all the time. It's a good luck thing. All I wear is Chuck Taylors because my feet are super flat, so I have a closet full of them, and I just will randomly grab two Chuck Taylors, one left, one right. Color can be whatever it is.
Okay.
The other thing is this, is the shorts, Jay.
Ooh.
I do look like a zookeeper, okay? But it's hot. So that's it. You guys wait. Episode 4, I'm actually wearing the women's tank top the Muskie Shop sells, Jay. So it's the spaghetti strap. And my shorts, you know, what are you going to do? I'm just soapboxing now. I think it's funny. But I really, really, really appreciate all the support you guys have given the show thus far. It's awesome. If you haven't watched it, watch it. Share it with someone. Show a friend. We hope it helps. For the podcasters, and I'll shut up in a second, Jay, I promise.
Okay.
For the podcasters, I promise not every bait demo will be like super basic. Okay. So we're working on, we've got some other stuff coming out where it'll be a lot more in depth on some presentations, you know, some of the
lures featured in some of the catches in the upcoming episodes too are a little bit more uncommon.
Right.
You
yeah.
Know? You I mean, hellhounds, I would classify it as a pretty common.
Yeah,
lure.
Absolutely. You don't want to come out the first episode, lynch them, glide. It's like everybody's like, what is this? And why are you talking about this?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. So, you know, Hellhound's a pretty safe bet. There'll be, and the one thing, and definitely covering, you guys have been cool enough to email about it. We're going to cover a lot of different baits. And like I said, a lot of different skill levels. But with the show, don't expect like super like podcast ninja pun. Like, I can't be podcast Steve in the videos because A, no one will watch, and B, I would come, like, people would come and haul me away if I did like a 45-minute rant at the end of a
And I can't get you to talk that fast, you know.
No,
not it's, on film.
No,
we got to keep these things moving, you
keep
know.
Keep them moving.
Just, like, try to keep them under. Probably the longest video will be 7 minutes.
Yeah,
you know,
go to
for
watch
the summer.
Right, watch the Muskie Shop TV for the Muskie porn. Listen to the podcast for the ramblings. What are you gonna? That's it. You know, what are you gonna do? We'll give you all the ramblings you want.
You said basic. Someone commented, it's just a, you know, kind of basic tutorial. I mean, your tutorials are always great, by the way, but
Donkey.
You know. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you got the visual aspect of seeing what the lure is doing and seeing how you're making it do what it does in the water. You know what I mean?
Jay, it be.
And that's important, you know.
It be what it do. It be what it do.
Right.
Think about it, folks. It be what it do. Deep thoughts with a hillbilly.
Deep thoughts with SP.
I have no deep thoughts. Everything is just, it's like an
instant thoughts,
like a rat in my brain.
That could be a new concept. Instant thoughts with SP.
Oh, good dude. That will,
like, you and Elmer just, you know, riffing back and forth.
Me and you talk on the phone. You know what my instant thoughts are? I would be like on a government watch list immediately. Like, I have to be filtered. You know that. It's going to be like, Whoa, slower down there. You know, if you ever been on the boat with me, I had one guy, he said, I thought the podcast was you unfiltered. He said, obviously that is just you holding back. And I said, yeah, pretty much. It's just, you know,
it's about 42%.
I'm at 42%. I am, You know, who knows? Get a little crazy. My instant thoughts need filtration. Anyway, enough about me. I hate talking about me, and it's stupid. And I'm stupid, and my show is stupid, and the podcast is stupid, but I appreciate you being stupid with me. On to the important stuff, Jay.
Yes.
On to the important stuff. I don't know what's important. Hold on.
Well, the Muskie Shop Bash.
Well, we covered that. What's important?
Yep, the Muskie Shop TV show.
Not important.
With Steve Ball fishing for monster muskies every week.
Dingus apparatus is what I am, folks.
New lures.
That's what I want to
cool
talk about.
Things that nobody has been able to access in any way, shape, or form, like some of those new glide baits.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, is the bad to the bone baits. And here's the conversation. All right. Let me preface this whole thing.
Yeah, right, because a couple weeks ago you were talking about it's like, stay tuned, we got some cool
stuff,
hard-to-get baits coming in.
Here's what has shown up, if you've not seen them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell my podcast listeners this. A couple of these baits are pretty friggin' expensive, right?
Yeah.
Okay? And we are not the spend $1 billion, but if you are a serious muskie angler, these are worth the money. Is Hot Tail Gliders... Hot Tail Dive and Rise showed up, right? So they got the mini, the full-size Dive and Rise, and the mini glider, which are all just bad, awesome custom baits. And then, my favorite, the Lynchums. These things are freaking awesome. If you are a glide bait aficionado, if you love the glide bait podcast we did, or you want to get good at glide baits, these things rock. It is not, I hate to say this, because literally you just watch that video where like, I just caught that big fish on a hellhound, right? Or like a
yeah, phantom. But you're talking about like, you know, one of the highest, high-end, coolest boutique baits that's out there.
There is, yeah. I mean, it makes some of this other crap where they're like freaking doing their wicked walleyes and painting silk. But yeah, these are real. This is the real deal. The Lynchums are expensive, but they're worth every penny because of the action. Yes, you can catch them on a hellhound. Yes, you can catch them on a phantom. But if you want like a actual really wide glide, you want killer belly roll. And I'm not a big one. You guys know well enough. I'm not big on like, show them something different like a paint job. If you want your friends to look at your baits on the deck of your boat and go, those are badass, you know what I'm saying? The muskies won't care.
Yeah, this is your cup of tea.
Yeah,
right?
And this, like, if you want to stunt on them hoes, these are the baits for you. I love them. I'm sort of proud. They're the Lynchums. There's actually a Jody Michael color.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was, yeah, I had to do it. I had to do it. I know how she likes koi.
Yeah.
So I named one of the patterns Jody's Killer Koi.
It's freaking awesome. Got the koi, got the whitehead carp, icy hot perch, black carp, hog eye, and Lake of the Woods money.
Lake of the Woods money. Yeah, the Lynchum guy says that thing is just deadly up there. It's his favorite pattern.
It's Mooney. On Lake of the Woods. No, these are all awesome. The cool thing with the Lynchums, they are impossible to get.
Yeah, this took a while. Yeah.
This is, and because they're all handmade. And
well, apparently he was only selling them a few at a time on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only
way.
And he's always out of stuff, and we, you know, got him to do a pretty good size batch for
us. Yeah, and so if you want like a bad to the bone glider. You know, and again, podcast listeners, you don't have to. I'm not going to tell you you got to have one of these to catch fish. But if you want to catch fish in style, that's what's up. No, they're
yeah,
good.
Yeah, if you're looking for something ultra cool, I mean, you know, this is about the most unique, cool thing we've gotten in a while.
And the cool thing is about this, let's get to the real deal with the fishing aspect, maybe I should say. What's the difference? Huh? That's probably what you're wondering. Why would I spend a bunch of money on a bait when I just watch some hillbilly that can't string two words together catch a big fish on a hellhound that costs $24? All right. the difference in some of these boutique gliders and some of your common gliders, your Hellhounds, your Phantoms, both of which, the Hellhounds and the Phantoms, are going to have a pretty tight glide. They're not going to shoot out as far. It's not quite as erratic, okay? They're pretty formulaic, which is awesome under some circumstances, as you have seen, right?
Yeah, I think plastic gliders mm-hmm. in general have that kind of formulated,
right.
you know.
And you're not going to get a really wide loping glide or some intense belly roll. What I like about these baits, if I'm fishing and I'm talking negative to neutral, lock-jawed fish, that's when I'm breaking these things out where you go, they've got a lot of belly roll, and they shoot really far. You know, it's going really wide if you want it to. They've just got a little bit more of a unique action. It's the same argument we're going to talk about, because we've got a ton of questions this week about bucktails, and I'll explain here in a minute, not to bore you to tears. Okay. We're going to talk about some different stuff. But to me, it's just like the big trend right now with bucktails is I've got stagger blades. In some
That's
lakes,
a trend.
Right. In some lakes, you got to have an 8-9 stagger, and you can catch 5-1 versus double eights for some reason. That's the cool thing with gliders, having a little more this or a little more panache on the bait. That's where you're going to get from the Linchams, as well as the Hot Tail Mini Gliders. These Hot Tail Diving Rods are super cool. But check them out, if nothing else, if you just want to see some really cool paint jobs. And that's the cool thing. Jody, Michael, and Jay, and Jim, and everybody there at the Muskie Shop has worked really hard on trying to, you know, because you always hear this stuff, but we got custom baits. Well, a lot of these custom baits you see, they're taking production baits and painting them.
Painting them orange.
Whoopity-ding-dong. I called him Orangey McOrange. Right? We give him a badass name, and that bait's named Badass Ass Kicker.
Well, I'm using the orange monkey shine here, and that's the only color that's going to work.
I got that from the custom bait guys. Yeah, it's a $20 bait, but it's orange monkey shine.
Oh, the orange monkey's the hottest pattern I've ever seen.
I've caught 7 muskies this year. 4 of them are It's like, shut
and
up.
And you know what? It was the only bait I was throwing the whole day.
I threw the hell out of that bait. Orange monkey, Sean. It was $1 more for that plastic bait. It's custom.
The cool thing is, it's a custom bait.
Guess what? If you can buy it, it's like, unless, like, yeah, custom. Custom's such a word that throws around. Custom.
Custom gets used a lot in this
custom
business. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Custom. I got some. If you, okay. I'm gonna pick on ourselves for a second, right? Yes, we have the only giant stockpile of Linchem gliders. There are multiple baits of the same bait, right? In the same cars. It's like, that's not very custom. Now it's boutique-y, right? It's boutique, it's small batch. When it is being sprayed on top of a hunk of plastic, I don't consider to be very custom. It's just like...
Yeah, right, yeah.
My silver Toyota Corolla is custom. You see like 7,000 of them on the road. It's just like... I put my sticker on the back, therefore it is custom. It is mine. Yeah, custom. I'm sorry. I'm not even talking just baits. I hate the word custom. It gets thrown. Oh, Jake, we need like a button that we just slam that makes a sound every time somebody says custom or the topic of custom baits comes up. Yeah. Custom.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, some of these guys are making these, you know, these handmade things. I don't even know how they're doing them with such a perfect. I mean, I know there's that laser cutting and all that, you know, these machines
that
are,
yeah,
they're guiding it, but it's just like, these are made out of wood. And if you look at some of these baits that have been coming in, they look like they're made out of plastic. Like it's some kind of, you know.
Oh, it's just the epoxy.
I mean, they're so smooth and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And
custom.
Yeah, the quality of the paint work is just awesome.
Dude, I want to like, okay.
How long does it take? Some of these guys talk about the time involved.
Big.
They're like, you know, they can't put a price tag on their production, you know,
no,
schedule, because it's like, you know, they'll do, you know, when they're painting, let's say they do 24 at a time because they've got a machine, you know, those machines that turn and help assist the drying so it doesn't run, and the clear coating, multiple clear coats, four clear coats, proper drying time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with a painting and, you know, six, seven different layers. I don't know. Pretty cool.
I can tell you with, like, the big norms and stuff with the
clear coat. Yeah,
the clear coat on that is, like, four layers. Right?
Four layers and of Envirotech or something real light, that real thin stuff.
Right, and you got to build it up, and then that stuff takes, like, 48 hours. It's just like...
It's got to dry properly. Yeah, and if you don't do it right, then the paint can flake or something. Yeah.
And that's the difference, like the custom wood baits. Guess what, guys? We have more custom baits arriving next week. Jake, can we do...
Yeah, we got another cool jerk bait coming in maybe next week. Keep it quiet. Don't.
It's on the. It's this is just between us. This is our little
secret. Keep it between you and me.
Shh! Don't tell anybody.
I won't.
Show me on the doll where Elmer touched you. Anyway, so we got custom. Can we do?
This is getting weirder and weirder by the minute. Do you notice that?
I've not even had enough Pepsi to be dangerous. The thing for me is, Jake, we just need to do an entire episode called the custom episode.
Custom episode.
Where I'm just like, this is my custom boat with my custom. Like, everything's custom. It'd be so cringy. Sup, bros? Welcome to my custom boat. This is my custom hoodie. Got my custom rod. Got my custom musky shot patch. We're going to be throwing some custom baits, brah. We hired a guide because we don't know how to find fish, but this guide's going to put us on them, brah. Here's our vid, brah. What do you think? Custom.
Smash like and subscribe,
smash
my bros.
Smash like and subscribe. Like, brah. Man, I really need a drink. Hold on.
Sure.
It's hot. I'm tired. Do you know what I've been doing, Jay? Other than talking about muskies, gonna update you guys. Well, I'll update you next week. I've been on a world record hunt.
Yeah, yeah.
Believe it or not, folks, I'm just gonna give you a little tidbit. There might be a video of this or not. If you ever want to know what the definition of hell on the water is trying to set a line class record muskie fishing on a fly rod. Not for me, it's for a client.
Yeah.
That is awful. It's really hard.
Hard, for sure, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, dude. It is just, I'm not going to tell everything. We might make an episode out of it. It's definitely going to be a podcast. I'll tell you, this is grueling. That's why I'm sort of punch drunk.
Well, I'm just thinking my limited experience with fly fishing is like, I don't think those light fly rods are really made for muskies, but...
Oh, I can. Well, wow. I'll tell you how we're doing it later. It's sort of nuts, but I can't say what size tippet we're using either. So if anybody, but I'll fill you in more. I'm just complaining now. That is why I'm sort of loopy. It has been, the hours are growing. I'm having fun. It's a different kind of scenario. Musky fly fishing is tough as is, but man, when you're going for something like that, and then yesterday, I even tell you, we had it on, Jay, and we lost it.
Yeah, I imagine that's going to happen. Kind of hard to drive the, you know, hook home on a five-weight or whatever.
I literally fell to my knees in disgust. I have it on video. I was just like, it's like getting gut punched. And it's just like, whatever. I'll tell you guys, I'll share more details later. But essentially with what the line class we're using, we basically have to be barbless to get any penetration.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And it was just like, the thing came. I'll shut up. This will be a whole other podcast of me just screaming when I'm done with this, but it is gnarly. Anyway, bunch of guys have been asking, probably because of the season opener and everything, about everyone's favorite bait, bucktails, tonight at 10.
The bucktail.
Bucktails.
The bucktail.
The bucktails.
Wow.
What?
Nothing.
That's my best fib impression I got. I don't know if it's good or not. Dub bears. Anyway.
Bears, bucktails, beers,
bears. Yeah. bears bucktails and.
How many artifacts does that make for you, Todd?
How many
Neiman Baker's dozen?
Everybody up there in that North Woods is just dumber than hell. How they, you know, they come up there. I'll just say this: they come up from Chicagoland and act like everybody's retarded. I love it.
Chicago.
Oh, guess where I? Yeah, I can't even do the voice because I'm a hillbilly and I have a horrible accent. But guess where I'm from? Like, no, really, I could never tell.
And they're wearing a Bears jersey.
Yeah, they're wearing a
in
Bears.
Wisconsin. It's like, Illinois.
Illinois.
Just throwing that out there. I'm not sure.
You look like you live in Plainfield there. But
no, there's a lot of people on vacation, man. Memorial Day. Wow. Behind us, and summer is here in Minocqua. It's crazy.
There's a lot
of people here already.
That's one of my
summer residents. Yeah, it's
favorite times of year. Have you ever?
So that's good. You know, with Canada closed, you know, some people are rescheduling their vacation. Let's get up into the Northwoods and do some trips up there. Why not?
Speaking of visiting the Northwoods, Muskie Shop Bash, July 17th. And if you own a Ranger, you are cordially invited to the Ranger VIP Winners Circle.
There will be a VIP center for all Ranger owners. Right. And anybody else, if you got a Lund or an Alumacraft or a Lowe,
trash,
there'll be an area for you too.
Yeah, it'll be by the dumpsters. Anyway,
it's by the drainage pond out back on the south end.
Yeah. Low owners are relegated to the stand in the drainage pond.
I got you. Okay,
but there will be pepper jack cheese on hand for Matt Raley. Guaranteed.
Yes, that's right. Last week, the question was posed, what kind of cheese does Matt really prefer? He texted me right away in the morning, and he simply said pepper jack.
Right.
So that's a spicy cheese. I don't know if you Tennessee people know what pepper jack is, but that's one of those spicy ones.
I'll tell you this. I know we've been rambling. People are like, please talk about muskies, but I'll say this.
Please talk about muskie fishing.
Please talk about muskie fishing. Please. Yeah. Speaking of the spicy Wisconsin flavors, for anybody that's been waiting with bated breath, I know there's people who have been marking calendars, waiting to know when the Culver's by my house would open. It is open, Jay.
It is open. Okay. You didn't tell me. Okay.
So I get to enjoy a taste of Wisconsin just miles from home.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? If they open a Mills Fleet Farm here, it's over. So anyway, we're going to get to – oh, shut up. God, I'm annoying myself. I apologize, folks. I'm a little kookadookie today. Here's what I got for you. Everybody's been asking about bucktails, right? And the guys that have been doing this for years that listen are going, shut up. You're turning it off right now.
Bucktails are boring.
Right. They are.
How complicated can they be? How much information do I need about bucktails?
What I wanted to talk about quickly, instead of talking about bucktail fishing, is just what are some differences in bucktails and how can we exploit those to our advantage, right?
Mm.
So, with that being said, and I'm not talking multi-blade, dump talking trilogies or anything like that, just the material, whether it be the skirt material or the different configurations and where they're useful, okay? So, like, if you take a bait, like a Shumway Giant Flasher, which is essentially a small rabbit with blades, those baits, your marabou baits, your non-flash baits, are going to look different in the water, maybe a little bit more wiggle, but I'm looking at running depth, right? I've often found that the marabou, like, especially the dense marabou baits, like a Shumway Giant Flasher, and some of these others are actually going to run higher in the water column. Right? It's almost like you're just talking about throwing a fly. That marabou will dry out when you're casting that thing a little bit each time. And then you've got a little bit more rise. Okay? It's
not
a deep running bait. Whereas if we took now the guys that are in the know, you're going to realize real quickly it has to do with the thickness of the blades as well. But a number 10 spanky bait, right? Got heavier blades, but it's flash boot. It's going to innately run deeper, retrieved at the same speed. Okay.
Yeah.
So don't look at looks because, like I said, I'm just paraphrasing so many questions we've got. How do you pick from the vast array of skirting materials? Do it strategically. If, let's say, I'm going to fish over really dense weeds and I want to throw some tins, that's the only time I'm really thinking about my friggin' Shumway Giant Flasher. Okay. I've got a couple of them hanging on the wall. I have one in dark, one in a light color. And this is like, if it's a really dense weed pack and I need something that's going to ride higher with a big bunch of vibration.
Those things, not to cut you off, yeah, Steve, yeah. Those things are so cool in the water. When that thing came out, the first year they came out, it was at the Chicago Muskie Show, and mm-hmm. Bruce Shumway came over and he's like, "Hey, Jay, can I show you these? Or you want to go to the pool? I got a couple new baits." I'm like, yeah, sure. And he threw that thing, and he's stopping and going, kind of working like a jerk bait, and that giant flasher segmented.
Mm-hmm.
It's you got a couple. I'm sure you used it. I'm sure you tried that. It's like, it's a bucktail jerk bait almost, mm-hmm. in a huge profile with, like you said, huge. A lot of marabou. That thing is so cool in the water, I can't even tell you.
Well, and that's the thing, though. Anything, like, if you look at Meps makes the all musky marabou.
Those are jointed too. Yeah, same kind of principle, right?
Your marabou, all marabou bucktails are going to run shallower, right?
Yep.
On the other end of the spectrum are rubber skirts. Okay. And this, all things being equal, let's say it's a double eight marabou versus a double eight all rubber skirt. You know what I'm saying? Like,
same frame size.
Trying to frame size here. Bear with me. Those are going to run deeper. If you look at the toothy tackles like the Bully with the rubber, it's going to add more weight. So that's the consideration, because if you're trying to figure out what those is the right bucktail, you've got to look at the scenarios that you will be fishing. Hence the reason you should own a bunch of different options, right? The other thing is this, and we talked about it with the Pete Maina thing, is like with hair versus flashaboo versus a natural presentation. Okay. Your hair bucktail versus your flashaboo is a way different presentation in the water. Flashaboo has a lot more action to it, right? There's a lot more undulation is about the only word that comes to mind that really makes a lot of sense, right? You got a lot of undulating material there. Where mm-hmm. rubber doesn't move as much, marabou has more of a flowing.
Yeah, rubber kind of has a wiggle, rubber mm-hmm. or silicone. Yeah, and then the marabou has that flowing.
Right.
And the flashaboo flares up.
Mm-hmm.
It flares up in a ball if you've got that draw from the blades, that draft.
Right. And so it's about picking the right skirt material. I've seen a lot of places where it's lake to lake where it matters, right? And so having some options there, it's not to be like, hey, you need a billion, but, you know, buy you can't go wrong. To answer one guy's question, you know, if you're going to get something out of every class, man, get a friggin' a deer hair 700 Booker, and then get a Spanky Baits double eight, and then get something in, like the Shumway Baby Flasher or something like that with a marabou, and you got some different options. You know, I like to have, and like you said, Jay, that frame size. A quintessential setup for me would be basically nine bucktails, where I'm going to have and I'm not saying this is what I throw, but if you were getting down to the bare bone basics, but functionality overall, having a all flashaboo double 10, an all marabou double 10, and then maybe a combination double 10 that maybe has some rubber, you know, attachment or whatever configuration there. And then the same with the eight, having variants there. So you can cover all those scenarios. Obviously, we get into the question that becomes, well, then you have color equations, right? Which is mm-hmm. the other one, another question we're trying to paraphrase here with the bucktails. Does blade color matter, right? So, you know, yes, it does. If you are fishing pressured fish, the best trick I've ever seen are colored blades. Okay? And for me, it's not about blades that are colored on the front. It's blades that are completely powder coated front and back. Okay. That's a good trick. So yes, having all flowage green blades, or having all black nickel, or, you know, some kind of coloration there. So yes, blade color does matter quite a bit in those scenarios. Does it matter all the time? No. I mean, there's been a pretty big trend, Jay, for a long time, the flowage green blades.
That's true.
You know, and that's a pretty hit bait. But yes, blade color can matter. Henceforth, why everyone owns a billion bucktails, correct, Jay?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I hate to say that. And again, we were talking earlier about these expensive lynchum baits and hot tails.
Well, right.
I'm always the guy with the cheap option. Guys, a real cheap option is buying a lot of parts and components. Obviously, get it at the Muskie shop, and they got the great section of parts and components. But building stuff on the fly, okay? One thing I did for a lot of years, and I still do to some extent, and it came from those Muskie Flashaboo and Marabous. They're segmented, right? So there's a big number 7 split ring behind the blades. Well, I could quickly open that split ring and put on a pre-made black hair skirt. Now I've got 8s with a hair skirt, right? And I can do that in any configuration. A lot of years, I had just a box, a like little Plano box that was full of pre-made dozer blades of here's an 8, here's a 9, here's double 9s, here's an 8-9, here's a 10-9, and had a bunch of different blade configurations and a bunch of different skirt configurations. And with a split ring, I could just swap my blades up.
Yeah, have extra skirts and have extra blade combos, and you can do anything you want. And there's something to be said about those segmented bucktails. Like, why do you think MEPs are legendary and have been around for decades and decades catching a million fish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bigger ones are segmented, and they have a wiggle to them. They have this unique action to them.
They got a little bit of action in the body and a little bit of waver. I'll tell you what, they cast really well because they're segmented. I like it. You know, a lot of guys, you could argue about the vibration down the wire shaft and all that fun stuff. I get it. I catch plenty of fish with what I'm doing, so I'm not worried about it. But that's a really strong option if you're budget conscientious. When I first saw, I'll be honest with you, Jay, when I first saw triple blade baits coming out, I just made my own dozer. Yeah, you could go, okay, I've got a dozer. You know, you make a short little skirt section, a short little bucktail section, and put them together. And now, like I said, you got all these different configurations. You know, you could go over that option, go over to like parts, blades here. What are these guys cost, guys? I'm just going to be honest with you. Okay. You can get Indiana blade for $1, a willow leaf blade. You know, you can come through here and go, okay, I need some Monster 7s. I can get a silver and a green, you know, setup for $5. Or you can already buy the pre-made dozer section. So, you know, it's very inexpensive.
Not expensive, right.
What I'm getting at is like, I'm trying to, real quick, I would say, and I'm just guessing, I'm not a math genius here, real quick, I would say $25 would get you about everything you would need as far as possible blades. Right? At least a little variety of everything. $25-$30, you could get a smattering. You know, Indiana, French blades, all this stuff. You know, we're talking some of these blades are 75 cents.
The blades aren't too bad until you start getting into Magnum 10s, you know, like the stuff on cowgirls.
Right, yeah.
Those start to get pricey. It just is the state of the thing.
Yeah, it just is what it is. You got double 10s, so, you know, $8, you can make your own cowgirl, or for, you know. But having that, heck, there's the double Magnum 9s. Having that variety at hand is never a bad thing. I have been known to just build a bucktail on the boat as needed. But like I said, if you're looking for a pattern, that's the best way I know how to do it, is having that modular bucktail system at your hand, you know.
Yeah, that paid off. For, you know, we were talking about that a couple weeks ago when you were fishing 2 weeks ago, I think it was, with Pete Mena.
Yeah.
And you had to downsize. You guys were like, we got to downsize our presentation with these blades, and it worked.
So that is a handy trick. The other thing about bucktails, and there's been a bunch of questions about how to catch fish on them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, throw it out, retrieve it, reel it in, good figure eight. That's it. The ninja moves, however, are adding variance. Okay. The real trick, I don't care if you're fishing a MEPS number 5 or if you're fishing a trolling girl, you know, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're fishing 13s or you're fishing a 5. Raising and lowering your rod tip throughout the retrieve will make the bait go up and down. Swinging your rod to the left will make the bait go to the left, swinging the rod to the right. You know, fishing with Pete Maynard just a bit ago, every time he was throwing a blade bait, he was doing something.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no boring. And a lot of guys, and I, trust me, I notoriously for years, I hate, and I still don't enjoy throwing bucktails. It's just not my cup of tea. ADD, but they're obviously effective and I do well in them. But what I'm saying is this, you can spice it up where you feel like you're doing something. If you're one of those guys, you're like, I'm boring. Spice it up by adding that variance, bursts of speed, right? And so if you're raising your rod tip and lowering at the beginning and then adding some left to right and bursting and slowing down and bursting and slowing down, now you're engaged and you're doing something. Okay, so you can spice that up. You know, as far as, and a bunch of people asking as well, other questions consolidating here about triggering strikes into eight. The one thing I say is do not slow down going into that eight, however, right? We want to work the figure eight with a good consistent speed, but some mid-cast bursts, right? Vary your speed.
Yeah,
vary it left to right, up and down, and you can trigger strikes, but be set up in that figure eight. Don't like stall right before you go into the figure eight. Line that up, and then add some speed in your corners is going to be the trick there. Jay, any other, you know, just some bucktail knowledge to impart?
Nope.
Good. Fair enough. Moving on.
Yeah, no, you covered some good bases there.
Well, the thing is this, I mean, they're bucktails.
Yeah.
You throw them at...
Well, you know, like you said, the word burst, you know, that's the old Joe Bucher ninja trick, Master Joda. You know, he always gives that thing that little burst, and you said mid-cast, and I think he would agree. That's kind of his, you know, I've never fished with Joe, but about mid-cast. All of a sudden, he'll burst that thing, and he'll just, like, rush it. Slow it down. It's almost like working a jerk bait and giving that thing a pause or some kind of erratic action to trigger the bite.
Well, just don't be boring with it. And like I said, I mean, you know, there's so much bucktail info out there. The one thing I'll say is this, and I'll shut up about bucktails. We'll never talk about bucktails again, Jay, by the way, ever. Jason.
Until next week.
Until next week, they will come up. The thing with bucktails is this. Find baits or blades that start immediately.
Ooh, yeah. That's always a bonus. It's something you don't have to jump start.
I'm not going to pick on brands. I don't care which brands it is. Everybody's got a personal favorite, whatever. If that thing does not start without ripping it, find one that works well. That's my biggest thing. I don't care if somebody told me, hey, man, this bucktail is just a fish-moving, fish-catching machine, but it only started half the time. That means I'm missing half the fish. Because a lot of times, if you're landing close to weeds or close to cover and structure, if the first 10 feet the blades aren't moving, it's a jerk bait.
Oh, yeah. The first 2 feet. Yeah,
you're wasting casts. And yeah, I see that often. So stick with baits that are working well. That is, and like I said, everybody's got a different sort of feel. Everybody's got a little bit different game and what they're doing. But don't struggle with bad bucktails, right? Just don't. Find them. Find bucktails that fit your fishing style that start immediately. Just a lot of fish get missed because of people making a, you know, you get that thing in, right? You make a cast. The blades never start. They collapse, and they're just collapsed under their own weight. And now I've made another cast. It's not the same cast, right? We've already made a splash in there. We may have already gotten its attention. Now that the jig is up, you can blow some opportunities with bad bucktails. So search out the good ones that you like that fit the way you fish, because everybody fishes a little bit differently. So one guy might really struggle with brand A, but brand A might be perfect for the fishing style of the next guy. So don't struggle with a bad bucktail. All right. First one up, Jeff. With limited time for musky fishing, am I better off doing multiple short trips or one long day outing over the course of a week?
That's a good question. If you do a lot of short trips, my first take is weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like if you got a long weekend where you got 2.5, or not even a long weekend, an average weekend, you want to pop up north of Vilas County or something and fish for Friday night through Sunday afternoon. It's just like you're at the mercy of, you know, basically one day's weather pattern. If you're stuck in kind of a sluggish pattern, it's like, oh, bummer. I wish we had another extra couple days because look what's coming Monday.
Well, and it's one of these things, if let's, you know, I'm guessing he might live close to a body of water or something of that nature. You know, he's got a job and a family and all that fun stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I would, if you see a day that looks good, I've got that perfect, you know, the storm's coming in and everything looks good, I'm going to fish all day that day. That would be the good day. If it's a crummy week, man, bop out there at sundown. All right, babe, I'll be back in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to play that by ear. I wouldn't say, if you see a day that's looking good and, you know, we got the storm clouds are coming in and everything's shaping up, try to spend the day. I would say that, though, you know, if you got to sort of plan ahead of time without weather being a factor, I would do the short trips. You know, that I would be on the water less, more days than I would rather be just there one day, because I've seen those perfect days where the storm clouds are rolling in and these things have lockjaw for some unknown reason. It happens on occasions.
So right.
I would spread my opportunities out over time opposed to just betting on one single day if time is that big of a consideration.
Right. Yeah, if you're doing a six-day trip, there's no guarantee that the weather's going to cooperate. Gee, like dude, you said.
I've seen six.
You know, especially in you know, like in July or, yeah, you know, early August before pre-turnover, you know, before there's any sign of fall coming, where you're just stuck in that, you know, that hot summer pattern, it can mm-hmm. be tough. And like you said, if you're not, you know, if you only have a couple of days, it's just like, okay, high pressure, mm-hmm. you know, let's get out and let's definitely fish an hour or two into darkness tonight.
Yeah, why
you
not?
Know, if we got the schedule, because that's right. your best chance probably.
Go fish sundown and tell the lady friend you'll be back after dark, baby. Papa's coming home hungry. Anyway, Josh says, in what depth of water do you catch most of your muskies, regardless of time of year? Josh, all due respect, I would say just the premise is slightly flawed in the aspect of it's going to vary time of year, right? In the fact of what depth that they may be over. Jay, am I overstating that? That makes sense. I mean, to me, you know what I'm saying? I there's not like a magical depth where all year long they're at 5 or 6 feet.
Yeah. Well, you fish a wide variety of water, and mm-hmm. I sometimes do, you know,
right,
just because of the variety. I live in Vilas County in northern Wisconsin, and it's like, you know, you want to talk deep, clear lakes like trout,
right,
Star Lake, Plum Lake, stuff like that.
Succotoban.
Completely different animal than some of the, yeah, I haven't been out there in years, though.
Right. It sucks.
But it's two lakes. Succotoban is two lakes, and one of them shallow, kind of stained and weedy, and the other one's kind of deep in structure. Like, so.
Well, hey, Jay, have you ever fished the dirty brown end of Succotoban?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Heard there's some big ones in there.
It's good water.
It's good water, folks.
It's good water. Yeah, there's so
come
many
and
lake
fish
around here. So to answer his question, I think it's just like, yeah, if you're fishing a lot of Doug Smith, uh-huh, aka the big ticket type water, that guy likes fishing deep, clear lakes. I mean, he lives for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, mean musky depth, it's probably about 18. But right, if you're fishing with the Wisconsin River or,
yeah, it's hard to,
you know,
say.
You know, the Turtle Flambeau flowage or something like that, you're getting fish under 8 feet usually.
Wow.
And the fish are probably at 6 a lot. So it's
there's just too
a
much,
tough question to answer.
There's just too much variance. I mean, there are muskies that are in rivers that are 4 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about parts of the Fox around Chicago. That stuff's super shallow. You know, so it's going to... it's going to differ body of water, you know, as far as, you know, what depth do I catch them at? Yeah, we're fishing multiple bodies of water in different states and different places. What I would say as a very, very, very generalized rule of thumb, they're going to be on the food shelves, in the littoral zone. If a body of water has food shelves, or if it has the break lines of that nature, you know, a shallow running, you know, almost rapid whitewater style river is not going to have those food shelves. So that's going to vary greatly. But if we're talking about natural lakes or even some man-made bodies of water, that 12 to zero zone is very, 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 very strong. The littoral zone is that place where weed growth takes place and the food shelves are created. That would probably be the vast majority of musky bodies of water, wouldn't you say, Jay, if you sort of averaged it out in some regard?
Yeah, and you start singling out, you know, for the active mm-hmm. fish, and it's a lot of times they're up, you know, shallower than low staging type areas.
And Josh, I'll tell you, the thing is this, like I said, it's just going to vary on what environment they're in. You know, every fish is going to react to their environment. So, you know, if you ask me on Lake A, it's going to be this, and Lake B is going to be another. And that's just sort of the difference of they're going to respond to the morphology of that lake in different ways. Jesse, what would be the best types of baits and best tactics to use in this early spring season? Blades and cranks, baby. That's what I'm thinking.
Most of the reports I heard from last mm-hmm. weekend, opening weekend here, in the Northwoods was this sounds like a little bit too general, but mm-hmm. small gliders,
yes sir,
small twitch baits, 5 and 6 inch stuff, right. And really small bucktails, and that's what the guys that were doing that were having fly fish weekends were throwing anyway, having some luck.
It's one of those things. Blades and cranks work pretty much all year long, and you know, that time of year, late spring, early summer, 5-inch slammers, 7-inch slammers, you know, single bladed number 5 and number 7 bucktails, and even up to your double blades, you know, hellhounds, phantoms, mini tap dancers, those small side to side gliders are great for your negative and neutral fish. Those would be the sort of the quintessential early season setups, wouldn't you say, Jay?
Yeah.
All absolutely. Right. Chrisen, what should I be looking for when my only option is bank fishing? I use Navionics app and try to find hot spots, but I'm not having any success in catching any muskies. Any tips would be great. This is on some bodies of water in Iowa. he says, love the podcast, and the app has cured my erectile dysfunction. Glad.
Wow.
Was it the truck?
You don't hear that every day.
Was it the truck nuts, Jay?
I don't know.
Truck nuts made me a man again.
He's fishing Iowa, bank fishing in Iowa. Did it sound like he was, I don't think he said lakes or rivers, did he?
Well, no, these lakes. So the
lakes, okay.
The trick here is going to be using those Navionics, right? You got your Navionic app, or on your desktop, you also have, if you guys don't know this, there's a Navionics app and a desktop version of Navionics, which are chart plotting, that you can look at lake maps, river maps, all that stuff from your phone, which is killer if you don't have a graph on your boat, huh? And it'll actually show you just like you're on your boat out there on the water. So if you want to even troll without a chart plotter, use your smartphone. And it's killer for bank fishermen. The thing you need to be looking for are weed beds, and you need to be looking at structure. You're looking at structure in reverse of what a typical bank or a typical musky angler from a boat is looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's starting at the shallowest and throwing out to deeper and bringing in. So you need to find presentations and places that are conducive to what you're doing and where you're casting there. The trick's going to be, really, just I'll tell you what I think of immediately as a bank anchor. You can fish some of the nastiest stuff, though, right? So if you
you can fish mm-hmm. slow and more effective and more stealthier. I shore fish a lot. I'm not ashamed to say it. I've caught a lot of muskies from shore.
My name is Jay Essie, and I am not ashamed to say I am a shore fisherman.
You know, you can't even, you know, get a boat into.
July 17th, Minocqua, Wisconsin, the Shore Fisherman's Pride Parade with Grand Marshal Jay Essie. Just walking down. What, just get the Shore Fisherman's flag and walk through town. I'm proud to be a shore fisherman. There's nothing wrong with it. What I'm telling you is this. Is if you can get behind the weed beds, man, if you get out early in the morning or late in the evening, you can catch some fish. A lot of times that slop is so hard to fish from a boat. That's what I would be thinking about. I don't know if like exactly where you're fishing has the dense weed beds, be thinking about the places where muskies should be, which are going to be shallow zones with shoreline cover and structure, and you can use that to your advantage to fish sloppy, sloppy, sloppy stuff. Okay? The other trick is fishing docks and boat slips. I don't know, like, if you can walk up to them where you're at, but, you know, from a bank, you can really pick that stuff apart.
And so that's what it's about as a shore fisherman. Yeah, right. You can really thoroughly fish areas that mm-hmm. most guys are going to blow right by.
Right. So be looking for any shoreline stuff, the back sides of weeds, right? There's two edges. When we think of a
yeah,
weed.
Yeah, the inside edge. Yeah.
When we think of a weed bed, it's musky if we're thinking the deep edge. There's a shallow edge that is relatively inaccessible to us, okay? I have been known to beach the boat, get off the boat, take a slop master, walk behind the thing with the net dragging behind me, catch the fish, net him, take the picture, and then get back in the boat. I've done it. I'm not ashamed to say it either, Jay. I, too, am a closet.
Do you have special little boots you wear for that?
Jay, I'm ready to come out live on there. I'm a closeted shore fisherman.
Nice.
So, just letting you know, yes, I do not have special boots.
Okay.
I've ruined a lot of shoes doing that. But, dude, there was one I was talking, if you guys remember last year, me and Guru were fishing a body of water, and all the fish were behind the weed bed. We had the boat setting on the, literally the freaking, you know, the port side of the boat's touching the ground. We just had it bumped up against the shoreline. And we were fishing behind the weeds and, like, just ramming the boat through there. So take advantage of those bites. As a bank angler, you've got an advantage on those cold fronts if those fish have slid up super shallow. So take advantage of that. And like Jay, you were saying, fish things exceptionally thoroughly, right? You know, fish it thoroughly. That would be the best take I got there. Jim says, zebra mussels have invaded many lakes. What used to be a 10 to 15 foot outside weed line is now 15 to 25. I love to throw bucktails and dive and rise jerk baits, but I'm not sure they go deep enough. I wonder just how far up a muskie will come to hit a bait. What's your opinion? A hot muskie will travel from Canada to my front door. Okay. They would get on a Greyhound bus and they'll come here to eat a bait.
Yeah, if they're 10 feet below the bait, yeah. 10 feet's nothing.
No.
Yeah, if they're hot, that's nothing.
However, if they're on that deep edge, and this is what I always think about, maybe I'm wrong, I might be dumb, but in a typical body of water, the surface is the warmest, right? And the deeper you go, the cooler it is. The cooler they are, the lower their metabolism because they're cold-blooded. So deeper fish are going to be slower moving than shallow fish in general, in theory.
Yeah, I think in general, the super huge fish are slower moving too. They don't need to move fast.
Dude, that's why exactly.
They're looking for an easy big meal.
Right. So if I'm fishing a deeper edge, I'm going to slow things down to some extent. There's obviously the argument of seasonality and a litany of other things to be thrown out there, but just a generalization. If I was fishing a 25 foot deep outside weed edge, I would be definitely throwing cranks. Now, he asked, how far will they move? They will move. If you run over a fish that's setting at 25 and you're burning a top rater and that fish is looking up and is actively ready to predate, it will move from 25 feet to zero so fast you'll never even know it. You know, if you think of a fish that's 4 feet long, right? How many flicks of the tail for a 4 foot
fish?
Just
going to say that, exactly.
Right. So 16 feet, right? Or what, four body lengths?
Yeah. Boom, right. Boom. He's there.
Right. One, two. I would bet a 4 footer is moving 16 feet. I'm just guessing. I'm just, you know, it makes sense. I would say 3 flicks of his tail and he is on you.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, he might hit it once and he just sort of torpedoes cause they kind of cruise. So that is a
yeah, it might be a surprise actually how right. deep and how far away some of these surface bait fish are. When guys are on a hot surface bait bite, you know, it's summer, it's like the weather's cooking and it's, you know, humid and it's going to storm or whatever it is, you know, and they're active and they're really moving. It's like, how far do some of these fish go to eat that bait?
Probably,
that'd be cool to know.
Yeah, and it's one of those things you just never know. I mean, I've seen them scorch across bays chasing stuff from a distance. But if I'm having problems finding these fish and I'm fishing that deep weed edge, get the rubber out. If you like fishing dive and rise and jerk baits, well, you know, maybe you don't want to throw a pounder, but a regular dog's not going to hurt you too bad. Get it down there. Make it easy. That's what I'm always looking to do. And if you guys notice on the podcast, a lot of my thought process is, what's the easiest way to do get that bait near a fish? Okay. The other thing I'd say on a deep weed edge like that, if it went from 10, because, you know, 10-foot deep weed edge is way different than a 15 to 25. Man, don't be afraid to troll. Get you a depth rater or a tough shad or whatnot and run that thing down there. That's just some thoughts on that. But, Jim, they will definitely move as far as they want just based upon, you know, just based upon how active they are. Chris, hey, Steve, I recently started getting into musky fishing. I fish on a lake in PA called Beep. It's a fairly big, deep lake with very clear water. It's got a decent amount of boat traffic, and everyone and their mom fishes there. Well, tell everybody's mom I said hello. He said, I'm working on getting a boat, mainly fish for bass and panfish, didn't need one. But in the meantime, I'm wondering if I should look for more shoreline stuff. Okay, so another shore question. You know, what should he look for in shoreline areas, and what lures are better chance of landing a muskie? He loves the podcast, and he shouts at the end in all caps, go to Dalton! Anyway.
He bet he does.
I bet
nice.
He does. He's a banker, boys. He's a creaker.
Oof.
This guy's a banker. Jay's a banker. I'm a closeted banker. The same stuff we were just saying to the other guy. Spinner baits, top waters, anything that's going to be shallow. Don't try to run. If you're fishing from the bank, a deep running crankbait is problematic, right? You're fishing opposites, but everything we just said to the other guy, take it to the bank. Corey says, I bought an 8-inch Fire Tiger and an 11-inch natural pike pattern jointed swim bait that have a single rattle ball in them from the Minnesota State Fair. I didn't know they sold baits at the Minnesota State Fair, Jay.
Okay.
They do. He'd love to get on the when and why and how to use these lures and get the most out of them.
He said jointed swim bait is what he described it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if it's a jointed swim bait.
Okay, I wonder if it's got a, you know, if it's got a diving lip or not. If it's just a slow sinking, shallow, segmented, you know.
Well,
hard to say
swim
what it is, but it's probably a fairly shallow bait, I'm guessing. If you said swim bait, not
funny you ask.
Bait.
Next week's episode of Muskie Shop TV features a jointed swim bait. It actually sort of does. So,
yeah.
It's actually, I won't give away the bait because I love the surprises, but it's got a lip on the one that I'm throwing. But any jointed bait like that, use a hybrid technique. You can use it as sort of a pseudo glider, a sort of straight or pseudo straight retrieve and jerk bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those multi-jointed baits put off a lot of weight. Like I said, I've seen, actually Pete Maynard did it with the Livingston Viper, throw it out and retrieve it. Out and straight. You can twitch it, you can jerk it, you can straight retrieve them. You know, when should you use these? It's going to depend on conditions. You know, because a swim bait can definitely depend on what fish you're fishing. It can be a negative to neutral kind of presentation, use it with jerks and twitches, or for hot fish, just burning the thing in. So there's a little bit there. Carter says, excuse me. First off, I wanted to say I ordered a 9-foot extra heavy shield rod from the Muskie Shop a few days ago, and he said it had free shipping. It showed up at my door exactly 24 hours later. That's because Jay actually delivers each shield rod by hand.
Only after Elmer blesses them.
After Elmer blesses them, Jay slides.
Smash like and subscribe, my dudes.
My dudes. Elmer.
You gotta watch the video to know that joke.
Yes. Elmer has no clue what any of that means.
No, but he's a heck of a skateboarder.
He is.
He can hang 10 with the best of them.
He longtime associate of the Tony Hawks.
Yeah, yeah. He's Tony Hawk. He can do a 980 off a 360 flim flam like nobody's business.
Listen, I will. Here's the deal. We'll take bets at the Muskie Shop Bash if Elmer can do a kickflip. Anyway, he's super excited the rod showed up. It's a great rod.
No, yeah, back to the – yeah, that's – thank you. Thank you for your order. Good luck with that. You picked a great rod.
Mm-hmm.
Glad I got there quickly. That's awesome. Great to hear.
He's asking. He said he's had a couple fish caught this spring, and he's had a couple super hot ones come in and essentially attack the boat – attack the bait boat side and headbutt at them and nose at them, but never really bite. He's wondering if we've ever seen this before on any tips to get these fish to actually commit. He said, my first thought was downsizing. He says, but he's using a 4-inch Phantom and a 5-inch Slammer when this happened. So he said, really can't downsize anymore. Here's the deal, dude. Sometimes muskies are stupid. I've seen them do it. I have seen them come in and poke baits with their nose, and you go, I don't know what's going on here. Right? It can be big baits. It can be small baits. Sometimes they just act goofy.
Yeah, Frosty from the Muskie Shop Guides was guiding after work last night, and he had it was a sunny night. Sun's kind of getting low. It's casting a big shadow under the boat. And he's convinced that his client did not have a follow. He's like, hey, there's one right there. You know, he's like, well, you know, keep moving your bait, you know, whatever, you know, keep figure eighting it. And he's like, I don't think that thing came in. I think it was following. The shadow was hanging in the, you know, it was using it like cover.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, the whole thing, like if you have a transom trolling motor going and it's on like one or two and the blade's barely turning, you know, the prop, I should say, you know, it's almost like a, you know, giant bucktail. And sometimes, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but I've seen it
come
two
in
or three
look
times where all of a sudden you look back and you're like, there's a muskie 2 feet right in back of the trolling motor. Cause he's like, what the heck is this? You know?
Right. That's when I usually just jump off the boat holding my net.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's probably the best way to catch it.
Man, it's, and I actually dealt with this week. The other thing is them mouthing behind baits. Jacking their jaws, going, I mean, me and Booker one time had about a 4-footer doing that, and we moved it like 6 times. And every time, it's coming in just tasting water, you know? And you go, I don't know what it's doing. Why is that fish acting that way? What is it looking for? What's going on there? You'll run into that. I don't have any sage-like advice for these ones. I call them headbutting and poking at baits.
Yeah, a lot of times surface baits hits, they got their mouth closed when they're hitting that bait. They just want to blast it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can, I think.
Because they can, yeah, just poking at it. You're not doing anything wrong. It is just what these stupid fish will do at times, which makes them so frustrating and so ridiculous. Jay, big announcements on the Muskie Shop Bash next week, obviously. Other than that, folks, thank you so much for your support of the new show we just did. And Jay is the man behind the wonderful editing and so much there. He answers all the questions in the comments and all that stuff. So thank you. If you've not watched it, watch it. If you haven't watched it twice, watch it again. You know, I'm teasing, but we appreciate everything. And if you guys have any ideas for the show, I mean it, and I keep saying that because we get emails, and if you're like, man, I would love to see this, or I'd love to do this, or learn about this, let us know. We'll do our best. The other thing I'll say is I promise you I'm working on the glide bait tube thing. A bunch of you guys have emailed. I will have it done here soon. Kind of busy. Jaybird, other than that, what you got going on? Or are we signing off?
No, but thanks a lot, guys. Check out the video if you haven't already. We really appreciate it.
Sayonara.
And we'll talk to you next week when we have more Muskie Bash news.
More Muskie Bash news later, dude.